The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Century, Oregon considers adopting Ryan's Law. The state of Oregon is considering changes to improve its medical marijuana law. House Bill 4142 was approved by the House Committee on Healthcare on February 12th and sent to the full House with a do-pass recommendation. We'll hear about that on today's show. But first, loyal listeners will recall that state legal medical marijuana programs and businesses have been protected from arbitrary attempts at federal enforcement due to what's called a rider that's attached to the annual appropriations bill. What folks may not know is that this medical marijuana rider actually lists the specific states to which it applies. So if a state program's not on the list, well, then it's not protected. On January 23rd, the glorious leader signed into law H.R. 6938, the Commerce, Justice, Science, Energy and Water Development and Interior and Environment Appropriations Act 2026. That's a mouthful. Anyway, this is the bill that funds the DOJ, so it's the one that has the medical marijuana rider. Nebraska is one of the newest additions to the roster of legal medical marijuana states, yet Nebraska isn't on the rider's list. So what does this mean? Well, I attended a press briefing held by Americans for Safe Access on February 16th to learn more. Let's hear now from the founder and executive director of Americans for Safe Access, Steph Scherer. She'll be followed by the executive director of Nebraskans for Medical Marijuana, Krista Eggers, and parent and medical marijuana advocate, Dominic Gillen.
Starting in 1996, when California passed the very first medical cannabis state law, we saw, reactions from the Department of Justice to try to shut it down. And that started with threatening doctors, then threatening state employees, and moved on to paramilitary style raids of dispensaries and of cultivators. And ultimately ended up with almost $1 billion, like $750 million spent across three presidencies to try to stop these medical cannabis programs that exist in conflict with the federal law. States can be in conflict with federal law. And so ultimately, after years of dealing with this interference, in 2014, we finally passed what we thought was going to be just a ceasefire to stop the Department of Justice from interfering with these state medical cannabis laws. So in 2014, there were 16 states that had medical cannabis programs. And so the CJS amendment had 16 states in it. And the reason that we have to put every state into that language is because of the limitations of federalism, right? Like, you actually have to name the state to make sure that those funds aren't spent there. And so, leading up, we were able to actually get a lot of patient organizations involved to make sure that that language stayed in there. We had patients all over the country writing op-eds. We were doing a lot of citizen lobbying, and ultimately, we were able to, keep the language in as we had before, but we could not get Nebraska added. And this is a first, right? This is, over the last 12 years, every time a new state passes, the states just get added. And we're not exactly sure why, but I have a feeling some of our other speakers are going to help us with some of that insight. This is a first. And I think what is more infuriating is that you have a senator on the appropriations, and you have some of the most dedicated advocates I've ever met in Nebraska, who I know were talking to their delegation. And so here we are, these protections have passed. And the other sort of first is actually just how resistant, and I guess it's just a few people in Nebraska, have been to allowing the voter approved medical cannabis law from moving forward. And another first is having a seated senator actually interfere with the implementation of one of these laws. We've seen senators and members of Congress weigh in on voter initiatives. But after the bill has passed, we have never seen something like the likes of Ricketts as far as working with the Attorney General to try to stop these laws.
You know, we became alerted several weeks ago that Nebraska had been left out. And obviously that's concerning on so many levels for patients in this state, for the industry that is up and coming in this state. Voters overwhelmingly supported medical cannabis at the ballot last November of 24. And that isn't when the conversation started. This conversation has been going on in Nebraska for well over a decade. When parents saw children with epilepsy getting help in other states with cannabis treatment, and so they started engaging lawmakers, educating. And so this has been a long, long, long fight. And to see the fight go from the legislative efforts that year after year failed, we took it to the voters. The voters spoke, and we see the same opposition that we have experienced for a decade from the same people. The fact that our federal delegates, an individual, Deb Fisher, was on the Appropriations Committee where this went through, was alerted that Nebraska, a state that is newly on board with medical cannabis laws, the fact that we were not added to the rider to provide the same protections that every other state has on this, you know, you really have to wonder why and who is behind this. This wasn't an oversight in our eyes. We have talked to so many different individuals out on Capitol Hill, advocates that are advocating and lobbying at the federal level on this. And, you know, from our perspective, and, you know, Dominic Gillen will weigh in, who has been at this even longer than I have, is that our current U.S. Senator Pete Ricketts has been one of the most outspoken anti-medical cannabis officials, I believe, in the country. And as you mentioned, even after the voters spoke during the implementation phase last spring, we saw Senator Ricketts do an op-ed with our attorney general and tell the legislature to stand down and not pass anything to move this issue forward. You know, his administration has warned against legalization. They've opposed legislative bills. You know, they continuously frame medical cannabis as this dangerous drug. And so, you know, the state agencies under his leadership, our attorney general, our governor, our lawmakers have been listening to him. And I think this is really the final straw for us in the state of seeing that now he's taking it to Washington. And, you know, the impact is yet to be seen. But I think it leaves patients in a very, very difficult position, a compromising position. And what the effects will be, I think, has us very scared.
It's a very appropriate, by the way, my name is Dominic Gillen, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. It's very appropriate that you've named this Ground Zero, because quite honestly, my son Will is patient zero in the state of Nebraska. My wife was, as far as we know, the first parent to go to a legislator in our state, which was 12 years ago this past November, and seek help. And so we have been at this for 12 years. Our son Will is now 23. He suffers from a very rare seizure disorder called Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, which basically means he has four or five different seizure types, which make them extremely difficult, if not impossible, to control all of them. We've looked at for the opportunity to use cannabis as part of what our doctors could use in their toolbox to help Will. And we have fought and fought and fought. We thought we were the only ones, and my wife found out there were more and more people just like us. And then Krista came on board, and just so many people. And it's just grown in this state to be where it used to be it was not a wedge issue, but I think it's becoming a wedge issue just because of the way that it's being handled by a few, and it is a few, legislators and elected officials in our state. I don't know, you know, Will's been on countless medications, including black box medications, which are the most severe, labeling by the FDA as possibility of fatality from taking them. He's been on medications that were never intended for children when he was a child, but because they worked with a little bit with adults, it was okay because it was FDA approved. He's currently on one medication that we've been told that to try and wean him off of it would be like weaning someone off of heroin. It's so addictive. And yet, Will's nonverbal. He depends on us for absolutely everything in his life. Feeding, bathing, diapering, all of that kind of stuff. And what's been frustrating throughout the years is we would go to our state legislators and they would say, oh, you need to talk to people at the federal level. We would go to our federal legislators, oh, you need to do it at the state level. So it was like we've just been a political football for the last 12 years in the state of Nebraska. And it's frustrating because now we have something. And those same officials on both sides of whether they be state or federal are still fighting against us and trying to make sure that this doesn't happen. Basically, lying about the things that are in the bill, about what the bill's intentions were, or the petitions, I mean. Former governor or Senator Ricketts, former Governor Ricketts, we literally were probably 15 feet away from him the day that he made his prophetic, or not prophetic, but his infamous marijuana is going to kill your kids comment. And he was looking, I mean, we were right there in front of him. He knows us because we've met him one time before. And it was what was ironic and interesting was the media that were over there on the other side kind of all looked over at us. It's like, what's your reaction to that? And it's like, all you can do is at some point in time, you just shake your head and say, I can't. I just can't believe those things are coming out of people's mouths. I just, so, it's been a frustration. We've moved the ball a long ways, but we should be in a position to be able to do something. And quite honestly, what's happening in Nebraska right now with the governor and the attorney general, they've offered a bill this year to try and clean up something they did last year. And to me, it's a fix-it bill, but it's a fix the mess that their commission created by basically setting up rules and regulations that break the law. And anything that our attorney general puts forth, because he's been behind a lot of this bill making and this amendment, I don't trust at all because he is threatened already to take the commission and take, file lawsuits against them. If he's rumbling to write these bills and he's not filing lawsuits, that's because he's put some kind of a something in there to make it so that he doesn't have to. He doesn't want to have to take responsibility for the threats that he's already made.
That was parent and medical marijuana advocate Dominic Gillen. He was preceded by the executive director of Nebraskans for Medical Marijuana, Krista Eggers. And that segment started with founder and executive director of Americans for Safe Access, Steph Scherer. They spoke at a press briefing held by Americans for Safe Access on February 16th. Krista and Dominic had some closing thoughts. Here they are.
You know, I appreciate you shedding light on how important this is at the federal level, but also to those of us in Nebraska. You know, we have seen that Nebraskans did their part. They organized, they advocated, they signed petitions, and then they voted. They gave a very, very clear mandate. And I believe that the leaders who are elected in office are put there to represent the people. That is their job. Their job is to represent the people, to represent the will of the people, and to do that both at the state level and the federal level. And right now we are seeing those elected, those that their job is to represent us, they are not respecting and not doing their job. And so although we aren't endorsing, we're not, pushing who we believe we should be elected, my message to people is on this issue, and this is just one of many, we have seen what happens when we put people in office to represent us who are not going to respect the constituents they represent. So know who you're voting for. When an issue is important, 71% of people have spoken on this issue. Clearly, it is important to Nebraskans. Make sure that you're doing, unfortunately, the next part, which is going back to the ballot and casting your ballot, your vote, for people that are going to carry that, again, both here at the state level, but also at the federal level. because right now that voice is being tossed aside. And I think that should make Nebraskans, it should make all people in this country very, very angry.
If you Google Will Gillen, you'll find lots and lots and lots of articles about our whole struggle and about the journey that we have been on and that he has been on for these past 12 years. And I also want to make mention of the fact that in Nebraska, the Omaha tribe has done this the right way already in a short amount of time. And that is who a lot of people in the eastern part of Nebraska are looking towards to be able to actually go there and access cannabis for their needs under the way the laws are written now. But the governor and the attorney general have both threatened to put law enforcement at the border of the reservation. So for those of you at the national level, this is crazy to be able to have to say that. The local people who are on here understand and already know that.
Yep.
But I would leave you with this. And I always felt like the miracle would be when Will had the medicine. And what I have come to find out is that my mantra has always been, don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle happens, right? And my belief was that the miracle would be the end goal. That would be the miracle. What I have found is that the miracles have happened all along the way over the past 12 years. And those miracles are changing people's minds. They are touching people's lives. They are my son, Will, who has never spoken a word in his entire life, literally speaking to thousands and thousands of people in this state without ever having said a word because of who he is and what he represents. And couldn't have been a bigger and better, more of a blessing to myself, to our family, and to the people in Nebraska. Because like I said, without ever having actually spoken a word, he has touched thousands and thousands of lives. And I just want to thank you for the platform and the opportunity to speak today. And thank you.
That was parent and medical cannabis advocate Dominic Gillen. He was preceded by the executive director of Nebraskans for Medical Marijuana, Krista Eggers. They spoke at a press briefing held by Americans for Safe Access on February 16th. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now, as I said at the top of the show, my home state of Oregon is considering some changes to its medical marijuana program that would improve access for patients in the most need. Oregon House Bill 4142 had a public hearing February 10th before the House Committee on Health Care. Let's hear some of that testimony. This segment starts with the lead sponsor, Representative Farah Chaichi. She's followed by Legislative Director of Compassionate Oregon, Anthony Taylor, Jim Bartel, father of Ryan Bartel, for whom Ryan's Law is named, Attorney Ken Sobel, and pharmacist Dr. Jill Simonian.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Vice Chairs Deal and Nelson and members of the committee. My name is Farah Chaichi. I am the representative for House District 35, which is Beaverton and Alloa. Thank you for the opportunity to testify again on this bill. I really appreciate all of your support last session and your support this session. And I'd also like to thank our persistent advocate, Anthony, and my chief of staff, Anne Marie. They've been working on this bill for years. I want to keep my remarks brief because I know you're busy and you want to hear from subject matter experts, not me, as well as Jim Bartel, who's the father of the young man that this bill is named after, Ryan, from California, who passed away after a long-fought battle with cancer. I think I shared with you last time that when I lost my mom, she had been intubated. And so we didn't get to be with her as she was passing. I feel that in hospice, we should allow patients to be with their family as long as possible, not just physically, but mentally, verbally. This bill is an important tool to facilitate cannabis use as an alternative or addition to opioid use in end-of-life care. While sometimes necessary, opioids are often overly sedative while preventing quality family interaction in a person's final days. I know how meaningful it is for patients to be present and in the moment for their last days and weeks with their loved ones. This is a quality of life and quality of care issue. The bill's goal is to ensure patients who desire this important and valid medical treatment have access to it across the board. I'll let you hear from the experts now. Thank you, and I encourage you to support House Bill 4142.
Thank you, Chair Nose. Vice Chairs Deal and Nelson. My name is Anthony Taylor. I'm a legislative director of Compassionate Oregon, an Oregon nonprofit corporation that advocates for cannabis law reform. I'm here today in support of House Bill 4142, and I want to thank the committees for their work on this last session and again to hear it again today. Ryan's Law originally adopted in California, and the California crew reached out to Oregon, and we've been trying to get it through the building since. It's also now been adopted in Minnesota and Maryland as well. So it's moving across the country, and I think Mr. Bartel will let you know that I think it's another 12 states where it's been introduced along with Oregon. The bill still requires written policy and educational training related to the use of cannabis and end-of-life care, but we have made two important improvements to the bill. First, we work closely with the Oregon Health Authority to fully eliminate the fiscal impact that previously raised concerns. Second, we narrow the scope of required education and training under the updated bill. Only direct care staff who are designated as OMMP organizational facility caregivers are required to complete the cannabis education, which significantly reduces the burden on facilities. It does not say that you can't take the educational requirement. It only states that these people are required. Finally, the bill applies only to registered OMMP patients and ensures that patients who are already lawfully using cannabis are not forced to abandon that therapy when entering hospice or residential care. At its core, the bill is about patient dignity, autonomy, and quality of life, particularly for Oregonians in the final stages of life. We respectfully ask the committee to once again pass this legislation and allow Oregon to reaffirm its commitment to compassionate, patient-centered end-of-life care. Thank you, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Good afternoon, Chairman Noss and Vice Chairs Nelson and Deal. My name is Jim Bartel. I'm Ryan Bartel's father. I'm here today in support of HB 4142. Ryan grew up in San Diego, where he was a two-time All-State distance runner and received a full-ride scholarship to run at the University of New Mexico. He then joined the Coast Guard after graduating from UNM and was stationed in Seattle. He later married there, had a son, and worked for the Seattle School District as a special education teacher for autistic children. In February 2018, he called me and my wife to say that he had been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer and had a few weeks to live. He lived 7 weeks from that call. The first hospital he was in treated his pain with morphine and fentanyl, which kept him asleep most of the time. Because of the hospital policy against the use of cannabis, we arranged to have him transferred to another hospital that allowed medical cannabis. As a result, he was able to meet with his friends and family in his final 3 weeks. Following his death, I researched the 37 states in the U.S. that allow medical cannabis to determine how they were regulating the use of medical cannabis in hospitals. A few states touched on it, but not to the level I was looking for. So in 2019, I wrote Ryan's Law and had it introduced in California Senate as Senate Bill 311. In 2021, it passed 40-0 in the Senate, 80-0 in the Assembly, and was signed by the governor on September 28th and became law in California on January 1st of 22. It's been in effect for over 3 years now. It's been no lawsuits. It's been administered now by all hospitals in California without a problem. In fact, it was written up in the Oncology Medical Journal as a very successful program nationwide. HB 4142, excuse me. Since then, Ryan's Law has passed in Minnesota and Maryland, as Anthony mentioned. In addition, 17 states now have introduced it and are going through their legislative hearing process. HB 4142 is Oregon's opportunity to do what California did and ensure that terminally ill patients have the opportunity to be awake and alert with their friends and family in their final days. As introduced, HB 4142 requires certain healthcare facilities to adopt policies that allow qualified patients to use medical cannabis in a safe and regulated manner. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I respectfully urge you to support House Bill 4142. Thank you.
Mr. Bartel, why don't you hang on just a minute? I'm going to let the other two witnesses testify, but just in case I forget, I'm going to say it now. Thank you very much for your advocacy on this topic and lifting up your son's story and making this change really not in your own state, but also sounds like across the country.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Ken Sobel. I'm an attorney in San Diego, in La Jolla, California. I've been practicing for 46 years and have been working with Jim Bartel really since the beginning to bring Ryan's Law to fruition in California and now to many other states. And And again, it's a question of humanity. No one should ever have to face the problem that Jim did, first finding out about his son and his imminent passing, and then to have to spend 3 to 4 weeks with not being able to provide aid, comfort, and companionship with his son while he was under the influence of fentanyl. We know now that cannabis is a safe and effective method of treating pain. As soon as Ryan Bartell received his first sublingual dose of cannabis, within a matter of hours, he was conversant. He was together with his family. I believe Jim said he got to see over 100 friends just before he passed away. So again, this is about compassion.
My name is Jill Simonian. I'm in San Diego, California, as the rest of them. I'm a pharmacist, and I am currently teaching at UC San Diego and UC Irvine schools of pharmacy on the topic of cannabis pharmacology and therapeutics. I teach medical students and pharmacy students. In addition, I am the president of Pharmacists Cannabis Coalition of California. This is a nonprofit that we established with a mission to provide badly needed cannabis education to pharmacists and other healthcare professionals in California and across the country. We give a lot of lectures and educational programs for this purpose. I had already learned about Ryan's Law through PCCC, my group. We established policies and procedures for Ryan's Law for hospitals to implement this in California, even before I'd met Jim. So I was very lucky to meet Jim and then help him push this forward through two other states. I'm here, of course, in support of HB 4142. And as already mentioned, Ryan's Law is about compassion first and foremost, but it's also about continuity of care. From a pharmacist perspective and medication safety perspective, this prevents unnecessary disruptions of medical therapy during transitions of care. And again, as already mentioned, it reduces the reliance on other higher risk drugs and less well tolerated drugs such as opioids and benzodiazepines, antipsychotics, what have you, whatever could be used. This bill establishes a safe and regulated framework for the use of medical cannabis under the supervision of pharmacists and nurses who can monitor for side effects, adverse effects, and potential drug interactions. I also strongly, of course, I'm a pharmacist. I strongly advocate for pharmacist involvement within this framework. We are the medication experts, and that would include such as the nurses have an exemption from liability for discussions and or recommendations. And I sincerely applaud the requirement in this bill for education for these providers who are going to be taking care of the patients. I think that's a critical piece of that. So again, I fully support this bill, fully support Jim. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
That was Dr. Jill Simonian. She was preceded by attorney Ken Sobel, Compassionate Oregon's Anthony Taylor, and Jim Bartell, father of Ryan Bartell, for whom Ryan's Law is named. That segment started with Oregon State Representative Farah Chaichi. They testified January 10th at a public hearing of the Oregon Legislature's House Committee on Healthcare in support of House Bill 4142, Oregon's Ryan's Law. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.